Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, welcome to the Writer's Routine podcast. Now, this is where we chat to an author about their daily working routine, dead simple, to try and pick up some tips and tricks for ourselves. Now, today, our guest is the crime and thriller writer, Mark Edwards. And here we chat about what it's actually like to work as a full-time writer, tightly in the hours that the kids are at school. Also, how he tries to add something supernatural into every book. And we find out how every now and then, everything about a story becomes abundantly clear.
A lot of the plot, it just kind of arrived. It was amazing. And I kind of wrote out the synopsis very fast, sent it to my agent, and then I wrote the whole thing in 3 or 4 months, and it was just so easy, really easy. The next book, Follow You Home, I mean, I was literally rolling on the floor, almost crying in pain, because I couldn't get the plots to work and I couldn't get the story to work.
So stay there, that's all on the way in this week's Writer's Routine. Hello, yes, it is Writer's Routine. My name is Dan Simpson. Thanks for being there, by the way, for the first show of 2018. Is it too late for formal well-wishing? I mean, I haven't seen you in a few weeks, so why not? Happy New Year! Love doing that, by the way. I'm going to eke that out until at least July. Anyway, thank you so much for coming back for a new year. And if you've just found us, welcome along. I've kind of already spelled out what the show's about, but if you have just clicked play, let me go through what we do every week so you know what you are definitely, absolutely subscribing to, right? Every week, we chat to an author and a creative about their working day. We try and find the intricacies, the eccentricities, the idiosyncrasies of their daily routine. So, who knows, it may help us out with our own writing and success. Now, today we're chatting to the crime and thriller writer, Mark Edwards. He's published 7 books on his own, co-written a further 6 as well with Louise Voss. And they're all mysteries, crime thrillers with a touch of the supernatural about them. Now, he's a full-time writer as well. He does this as a proper day job, which is incredible. I just love that authors, kind of me, hopefully in the future, possibly one day, they make money, they pay the bills, have a family, living out their dreams, writing stories. It's fantastic. It does have its downsides, though. And we'll chat to Mark about what it's like trying to cram a full day of writing into the silent few hours that the kids are at school. Now, when you listen to this show, if you're enjoying it and you're learning some nice hints that will help you with your own writing, please do me a favour, right? Leave us a review on the iTunes podcast store. We're trying to take Writer's Routine to new heights in 2018, you know, hashtag new year, new me and all of that. So yeah, find us on the iTunes podcast store, leave us a few nice words and 5 stars. That would be fantastic. Also, in a little bit, we'll get the top 10 tips for writing from some of the greatest writers who have ever lived. So make sure you don't miss that. First, let's get into our chat then with this week's guest, crime and thriller writer Mark Edwards, who starts with a big recent change to his writing routine.
I've only recently got my own office because I used to just work at a tiny desk in the corner of our dining room in my old house. But now when I sit down, I have quite a large office, which is a converted attic, and I've got a big desk, which is made out of this reclaimed oak, which I bought on Etsy, a very lovely desk. I've got a huge iMac, which I treated myself to a couple of years ago. I've got some framed records on the wall in front of me. I've got a Lana Del Rey album, and I think I change them around all the time. I've got the Stranger Things soundtrack hanging in front of me as well.
Do you listen to music while you write?
Yes, yeah.
Talk me through that then. How does it affect what you write? Do you find yourself, you maybe need pacier music for more action-led sequences?
Well, it's more like when I'm writing a book, I'm trying to capture a particular atmosphere, and I'll tend to listen to the same artist or the same album even, over and over and over again while I'm writing. So, for example, I listen to a lot of Lana Del Rey because it's got that kind of moody, noir feeling to it. And it's quite kind of slow and atmospheric. And so I will listen to her albums kind of on a loop sometimes when I'm writing, because I find that as soon as I put them on, it gets me into that space in my head. And then the last book I wrote, I listened to lots of Depeche Mode, so like old 80s electronic stuff, and something about his voice and the kind of the synthesizers. And I was mixing that in with a Stranger Things soundtrack as well, which is very electronic and 80s as well. And so something about that kind of helped me get into the atmosphere of the book.
How did you develop this system then? How many books were you through before you kind of realized that music was so important for you, getting into the frame of mind of what you were writing?
Probably two or three. And before that, I would just listen to whatever my favorite albums were at the time. And when Spotify came along and you've got this access to the entire history of music, I'd sometimes find myself spending more time flicking through Spotify trying to find something to listen to than writing. And now I have a record player sitting on my desk, so I'm listening to vinyl as well. And that's actually quite good because it makes you get up every 25 minutes and turn the record over, and it forces me to stand up from my desk and kind of get the cramps out of my legs. So
the show is called Writer's Routine. Let's do that part of it then. Talk me through your day from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed on a day of writing, because you are a full-time writer.
Yeah. Well, I work Monday to Friday. I pretty much keep office hours, and I work between the two school runs. So I've got three children under 11, aged 4, 6 and 10. So the first thing I do when I get up is deal with them, our dog and our two cats. They all need to be fed and got out the door. My wife, who also works from home, we take it in turns to do the morning school run. And then after I've had a couple of coffees, I will go up to my office at about 9:30. I will work through the morning, and that's generally a mix of writing and all the admin that goes around writing. Often I will take the dog out for a run around lunchtime. We've got a golden retriever who needs like an hour's exercise at least. And then I'll come back and work until about 20 past, 3:30, which is when the children get home from school. And then as soon as they get home from school, the house is filled with noise and activity, and it's very distracting. There's also the fact that I am only really able to work creatively and create stuff that has the energy and the kind of meaning to it that I need in quite short bursts. So if I try and work for more than 5 or 6 hours a day, then I'll just kind of run out of steam and run out of energy. And so doing quite short days works well for me.
Are you writing nonstop in those 5-6 hour bursts?
No.
Or do they come in 90 minute chunks? How does that work?
It's all a bit sporadic based on whether I get distracted by things like social media, whether I've got lots of other things to do, like answering emails and dealing with. Because when you're writing a book, you're also always having to deal with the stuff that goes along with the last book that you wrote. So there's promotion and replying to emails from the publisher and checking things and tweeting about it. And so I'll kind of try and mix those things in during the day. And it depends on what stage of the book I'm at. So at the beginning, when it's slower going, and because I make it up as I go along, basically, I'm a pantser, there'll be a lot more time spent kind of staring into space or wandering around or doing displacement activities at the beginning of the book. Whereas, at the moment, I'm like 2 days away from the end of a first draft of a new book. And so I'm going faster and faster as it's going along, and I'm spending more time actually concentrating on the book. I wanted to get it done before the schools break up for Christmas. So I set myself this target. I started writing it when they went back to school in September, and I said I need to get the first draft finished by the time they break up for Christmas. So I'm 87,000 words in. I've got 2 chapters to write. So I will do 1 chapter tomorrow and probably 1 chapter on Thursday, and then that'll be the first draft done. And then I'll take a break for Christmas and come back to it in the new year.
If you've got a self-imposed deadline,
yeah,
how are you making sure that you're sticking to that? Have you allotted a certain amount of words a day, an amount of pages or chapters? How does that go?
Yeah, I've been making myself write 2,000 words a day. And if there's a day when I only do 1,500 for something getting in the way of some life thing getting in the way, which often happens, I write 2,500 the next day, and have to be quite strict with myself about that I stay at my desk until it's done. The last book I wrote, The Retreat, which is the next one that's coming out in May, I made myself write 3,000 words a day, and I actually wrote the first draft of that book really fast in about 8 or 9 weeks. Firstly, because I knew exactly what was going on in that book, and I didn't have to keep stopping to work out what was going to happen next, so I was able to write faster. But also because I had this other deadline that I'd set myself, that I needed to get it finished by a certain day earlier in this year. But I haven't been able to keep up that fast pace for this one, but I've been doing 2,000 words a day, which is still...
Why have you gone into this book knowing a lot less about what's going on than you went into the last book that you wrote in The Retreat?
Well, because, some of the books I will start off with a very vague idea of what's going to happen. I'll have a central premise or a hook, and I won't have any idea of what's going to happen at the end, and I will sit down and work out the backstory first, and then from there, and then I will write the novel in the present day. We're going back to the flashbacks to the backstory, and only as I'm writing it can I kind of chisel the story out of the stone. I guess it's kind of there, like imagine a block of stone and the story's in there somewhere and you're chiseling away at it, trying to get it out in its perfect form. And some books are like that, and others just kind of arrive in a vision that comes down from above. And they seem to alternate. So one of my old books, for example, Because She Loves Me, which is the second one, which is about a jealous girlfriend, the whole thing came to me at once, the title, the premise, and a lot of the plot. It just kind of arrived. It was amazing, and I kind of wrote out the synopsis very fast, sent it to my agent, and then I wrote the whole thing in 3 or 4 months, and it was just so easy, really easy. The next book, Follow You Home, and the one after that, in fact, The Devil's Work, were both... I mean, I was literally rolling on the floor, almost crying in pain, because I couldn't get the plots to work and I couldn't get the story to work. But actually, I think that those books, the ones that were harder to write, were better than the ones that preceded them that were easier. And I think maybe that's because I was getting more ambitious and trying to make them... And then with The Retreat, I felt like that was the first one where I had the ambition, but it also felt quite easy is the wrong word, but I knew what I was doing, and I kind of had that vision of how it was going to go, and I knew exactly the theme of the book and what I was trying to say.
We'll get more routine chat from Mark Edwards in just a sec. And stay there. Next, we'll hear the top 10 writing tips from some of the 10 greatest writers in history.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, welcome back to Writer's Routine. Now, very quickly, before I get into those promised tips, let me just remind you of all the ways that you can keep across what we're doing on the show in 2018. You can give us a follow on Twitter. We're at Writer's Pod on there, which is really handy if you want to see me retweet any morsel of praise that we get. Also, we're on Instagram. It's dead easy, Writer's Routine on there, where you can get teaser clips and videos from the podcasts, and you can see some live stories as well from some of our interviews. And you can also find all the ways to listen to us, and you can get in touch with the show over at writersroutine.com. And remember, if you are listening through iTunes, I'm sorry to bang this drum again, but it's really important. Please do give us a review on the podcast store. Just get on there, type in Writer's Routine, write a few nice words of your own, creatively and floral prose, I expect, with all the help that you've been given from authors on this show. And 5 stars as well is really helpful for the chart. I promise, it's dead simple. Just find Writer's Routine on the iTunes podcast store. Now, this was sent to me by Vicky. So thank you very much, Vicky, over at writersroutine@gmail.com. You see, another way that you can get in touch with the show. And it's a Guardian article from very early on this year. It's called Top 10 Writer's Tips on Writing. Now, it's written by Travis Elborough. This could not be more Writer's Routine podcast. And I saw it and thought, I just need to share this with you. Now, the first one comes from Hilary Mantel. It says, a little arrogance can be a great help because the greatest thing a writer can do, she says, is to cultivate self-confidence, arrogance, if you can manage it, so you always keep believing in yourself, which is handy. I'm sure many people would argue that I don't need any persuasion to be even more arrogant. The second one comes from Leo Tolstoy, who says, pick the hours that work best for you. He always works first thing in the morning when one's head is particularly fresh, and most of his best thoughts come in the morning while still in bed or after a little sunrise walk. There's another tip from William Faulkner, who says, read to write. Read everything, he insists. Trash, classics, good and bad, see how they do it and absorb the best parts of their work. Then there's Catherine Mansfield, who says that writing is better than doing nothing. So she thinks if you're sitting around procrastinating, just write, just get it out there. We've heard so many times on the show so far about the vomit draft. Put it down, you can always fix it later on. Ernest Hemingway slightly disagrees. He says you need to stop while the going is good. So stop while what you're writing is the best that you've done and don't worry about it until you start working the next day. He says that your subconscious will always keep working on what you've been thinking about and it can only get better. Let's see, John Steinbeck is number 6 on this Guardian article. He says take it a page at a time. He thinks that you should abandon the idea that you are ever gonna finish. Don't think of it as a 400-page novel. Think of it as one page at a time of a story, and it can only grow. Miranda July, she's got quite a big one here, number 7. She says, don't worry about the bad drafts. She says that just get it out there. Again, the vomit draft. She says, get that first draft done, and then it's kind of like Play-Doh, and you can work it, and it's malleable to what you want to do with the rest of the piece. F. Scott Fitzgerald, I think we've heard him in Distinguished Diaries before, right near the start. He says, don't write and drink, which is kind of rich coming from him. He says, it's become increasingly plain to me that the very organisation of a long book or the finest perceptions and judgment in time of revision do not go well with liquor. Again, rich coming from everything we've heard about him so far. Zadie Smith, the newest author I'd imagine on this list, says, get offline. Work on a computer that is completely disconnected from the internet. I think we could all sometimes switch off Spotify and stop looking for instrumental, motivational film scores and just, you know, get back to the writing. And finally, this is absolutely the best one as well. It's from Muriel Spark, who just says, very simply, get a cat. If you want to concentrate deeply on some problem, she says, and especially on some piece of writing or paperwork, you need a cat, because the cat gives you great satisfaction. It will settle down. It will be serene with you. Its presence alone is enough, she says. The effect of a cat on your concentration, Muriel Spark thinks, is remarkable and strangely mysterious. So there you go. 10 tips from the 10 greatest writers from this fantastic Guardian article, by the way. It's called Buy a Cat, Stay Up, Don't Drink. And that is really all you need to learn about. If you're having trouble, remember, stop drinking, switch off the Wi-Fi, and maybe take a trip to Pets at Home. Right then, let's get back to our chat with crime and thriller writer Mark Edwards, who's taking us through his writer's routine. And we found out how sometimes the books just appear to him fully formed with everything in place, but others kind of don't. And I was wondering, really racking my brains, about what makes a Mark Edwards novel a Mark Edwards novel.
So my books always have something in them where there's a hint that there's something supernatural going on, and then there's a rational explanation for it. That's one of my things that I always do. And when I first conceived this book, I was going to go all out supernatural with this one. So the original synopsis was there's going to be a supernatural reasoning behind everything that's happening. And then I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. So I started writing the book thinking that a ghost is going to do it. And then thought, no, I need to find a rational explanation. So the whole challenge around this book has been, what's really going on? Like, who is actually behind all this stuff?
How much of writing is a battle between you having to work at something and kind of consciously think about what you need to do rather than a romantic idea of telling a story?
What happens is this is with me, and I think it's the same with a lot of writers, you have this romantic notion of what it's going to be like to be a novelist, especially a full-time novelist. It took me a very long time to get to that stage where I'm able to write full time, like 15 years or something ridiculous. I mean, most of those unpublished, but even like the first 2 or 3 years when I was published, I still had a day job or I was freelancing.
What were you waiting for then? I don't want to be crude with the details, but what are you waiting for before you make the decision to turn full time? Is it simply...
Oh, it was money.
Yeah.
Financial. When I mentioned Because She Loves Me, that was the first one that I wrote full time. Maybe it was a kind of burst of euphoria that I was finally... full time that helped. That
maybe
helped
it's a panic that you think, well, I've got to validate my existence and pay for things using this. I better get them done.
It was, and also I had a very tight deadline with that book that the publisher had given me, that I had to write it in 4 or 5 months. Whereas they give me longer now, they allow me more time to kind of roll around on the floor, banging my head on the carpet. they were whipping me more aggressively before to get the books out faster.
As a full-time writer, you're relying on yourself, obviously, to come up with ideas to simply pay the bills. How much of that... Do you have a system with coming up with an idea that you can use to write a story, or are you simply, fingers crossed, praying that the muse strikes?
I am nearly always thinking 1 or 2 books ahead. So for example, now as I'm approaching the end of this book, and when I say this is I'm nearly at the end, I've still got 2 months worth of rewriting before it even goes to an editor. And after that, there'll be lots of rewriting as well. So this book won't be completely done until next spring, but I am now in the back of my mind working out what's going to happen in the next book. And I also kind of know what's going to happen in the book after that. I don't think I've ever been in a position where I didn't know what my next book was going to be about, or at least what the central theme or hook of that book was going to be.
And how are you coming up with the central hook? Is it simply a question that you're asking yourself? Or wouldn't it be interesting if this happened
they all
and
come
this happened?
They're all completely different. So my first few books were all based, they were all influenced by things that had happened to me. So Magpies was about neighbours from hell. I'd had neighbours from hell. The jealous girlfriend thing, because she loves me, that was based on something that I'd gone through when I was younger. Although she wasn't actually a murderous psychopath like she is in the book. Folly Home was based on a time when I went interrailing around Europe and got robbed on the train and ended up stranded in the middle of nowhere. And that became the seed of an idea.
That's really, I want to know what happens now, but I'm going to have to read the book. I feel you can just tell me the story, but I'm going to have to pick it up.
That was like a gift, really. It feels terrible at the time, but it gave me a great idea for a book. Years later, my editor said to me, well, you need to think of some other, more terrible things that have happened to you that you can turn into books. And I thought, oh, now what about that time when I was robbed on the train when I was 20? And I kind of moved the location, but it became the inspiration behind that story.
So then what happens there? So you know that you need to write this book about you being robbed while you're interrailing. How are you then fleshing that out to make a 300-page novel?
Well, the first thing I had to decide was where it was going to happen. And I chose Romania because I thought of the kind of creepy... There's no vampires in this book, but people kind of think, oh, it happens in Transylvania in the middle of a dark forest. And I was also kind of playing on that idea of there was lots of stuff with Nigel Farage and horrific people like him on the radio talking about Romanians coming over and stealing all of our jobs and our women and all this crap. And I thought, well, I wanted to create some... Eastern Europeans who really were scary. So I decided to set it in Romania. And it was from there that... And I just had this vision of this couple being kicked off the train in the middle of nowhere. So the book starts, the first 10,000 words is they're on the train, they meet some people on the train, something happens and they get kicked off and they've lost their passports, they've lost everything, and they have to walk down this railway track through the middle of the... forest at night, and there's these kind of feral dogs behind them, like making them go in one direction, and they see something in the woods, and then it cuts to like months later and they're back home in London and this traumatic thing has happened to them. They've seen something terrible and they vowed never to speak about it, and they've split up because of the trauma that it's caused. And I wrote the first, and then all this weird stuff starts happening to them in London, and they start to think something has followed them home. But I was like 30,000 words into the book, maybe more, before I even worked out what they'd seen in the woods. I was basically blagging it, I guess.
And how did that become clear to you? How did you discover what they found in the woods? Was it a moment of inspiration? Did you have to sit down and mind map what actually could be going on?
I didn't mind map it, but I sat down and I can't actually remember when I had the breakthrough. I think what I started to do was write the scene where they walk through the forest and they see this big house. Because I'd hyped it up, basically, in the start of the book. If it wasn't something really horrific, readers would be disappointed. So I had to come up with something really strong and really scary. So I was trying to think, well, what's the worst thing that I can imagine that could be going on in that house? And that's what they see. You would think, wouldn't you, that it would be easy by now, that I would have a kind of formula. But what actually happens is every time you start a new book, well, for me anyway, I feel like I've forgotten how to do it and I have to discover it all over again. And I've talked to a lot of writers, and lots of writers are the same. But having said that, there are certain elements that will crop up over and over in my books. So, for example, the main character will always be quite an ordinary, everyday person. And because my hook is that I write scary stories about... I write about scary things happening to ordinary people. That's my kind of mantra that I stick to every time I try and come up with a story. They're not like heroes or action heroes or people with amazing professions. They're just ordinary people like you and me. And then there will always be, like I said before, some kind of hint that there's something supernatural going on. There will always be at least two twists at the end, so there'll be the kind of big reveal, and then there's always like another twist in the last couple of pages. Those are the bits that are really hard to come up with, and they nearly always come right at the end, almost as I'm writing them. The final if you come up with a really good final twist right at the end, it's a really amazing feeling. And in fact, I know I'm sort of jumping around a bit, but the book that I'm writing at the moment, where I'm a few thousand words from the end, I only worked out yesterday how it's going to end. So I had no idea what was going to happen at the end of this book.
How much do you need to rework what you've already written with that now?
Well, so yeah, I will now have to go back, and there will be things that I've thrown in that I will now take out because they don't work anymore. And there will be bits that I'll have to go back. So I'll have to put in some clues for the reader and some new red herrings and things. So with this book, I don't think it's going to require that much editing, because although I hadn't really worked out exactly how it's going to end, I did know who'd done it, at least. I think it's quite important that you know who done it at the start. Otherwise, you can get yourself... And I have tried to write books before I didn't know who done it. And you get yourself in a terrible mess. Or I've changed my mind at the last minute. And then you have to go back and rewrite loads. Because you suddenly come up... You can be like 80 or 90,000 words in and suddenly think, oh, that would be an amazing twist if this happened. And then you have to go back and do quite a lot of surgery on the early chapters. But it's worth it. It's worth it in the end.
Oh, that is it. The end of another Writer's Routine podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And also, thank you so much to Mark Edwards. You can find links to all of his work on my website, which is writersroutine.com. It's kind of funny. I caught Mark a month or so ago now on a flying visit to London of his. He lives in the country somewhere. Right before he headed out to a crime writer's Christmas lunch. And the next day, I chatted to another author who went to the do with Mark as well. And it turned out that it extended way beyond a simple Christmas lunch. The stories that he refused to tell. That was Derek Farrell, and he's on the show next week, so make sure you're back for that. And as always, give us a follow on Twitter. It's at WritersPod on there. Instagram, you can get us Writers Routine and have a look what we're doing throughout the week, and all the ways that you can listen and get in touch with the show is at writersroutine.com. And remember, as always, please, if you can, leave us a review on the iTunes podcast store. And I'll see you next week with Derek Farrell and another Writer's Routine.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.